House will come to order. Flag salute will be led by Representative Barton.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Opening ceremony will be presented by the good Representative Andy Olson, District 15 from Albany. I put that in for you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It doesn't say good there, but thank you. Morning, everyone. Hey, good. That's good. Hey, I just want to take a few minutes here with you. And OB, thank you very much for asking me to do this. I told him the other day that, I was in the sermon mode then today. I just want to share one of my favorite passages from Scripture. It comes out of Matthew chapter 6, Sermon on the Mount. And it's appropriate for where we're at today in our state as well as in our nation. It deals with do not worry. But let me read just a few verses here. And Jesus is speaking here. Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow, nor reap, nor store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hair or hour in his life? And why do you worry about clothes? And I'll move on with this toward the end of that portion of the scripture. But the key to that, as Jesus was sharing, is verse 33, to overcome worry. Because the antidote to worry is faith. But he says, but seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of these things shall be added unto you. Now let me put it a little bit more in perspective for where we're at today. But going back 100 years ago, the average life 100 years ago was 47 years. Houses that were built, only 14% had bathtubs. There were 8,000 cars in the United States. There was 144,000 miles of paved road. A dozen eggs cost 14 cents. Women washed their hair once a month. Las Vegas had a population of 30. There were 45 stars in our flag. Only 6% of the population graduated from high school. We live in such blessing today, but it is so easy to see the lack and not the gift. No number is lost to God. He is not overwhelmed with 6 billion people, not when there is 6 trillion stars in the universe and he knows each one of them by name. He is aware of every sparrow that falls to the earth, and he knows every hair on your head. And some of you, it's a lot easier for him to know how many hairs you have on your head. My final thoughts for you regarding worry. Worry is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but doesn't get you anywhere. Worry is like the dark room where negatives are developed. And remember, faith is the antidote to worry. Let's pray. Thank you, Lord, for this morning and for this time together. And pray, Lord, that you just go with each of us here and our families, as many of us will be traveling home this weekend. But pray for our leadership as well now. We thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Do I need to talk to you? Oh, courtesies. Courtesies, Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, let me begin by saying thank you to the good representative from Albany. Those words were very prophetic, and you just never know how a life will be touched by the message you share, and I'd share with you today that your message touched me. Thank you. Colleagues, this morning I'd like to introduce to you my son, Alex. Alex, stand up here. Alex is an eighth grader at Heppner Middle School, And he is an honor student at Heppner Middle School. He's a star scout, rank of star, in the Boy Scouts of America. He's a teacher in his local church. And he's the favorite big brother of his youngest sister. Colleagues, Alex is with me here today visiting the Capitol. And later this afternoon, we're going to be heading back home to Heppner. Anyway, if you'd just extend courtesies to my middle son, Alex. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. And now, Representative Bailey with our moment in history.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's History Minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Erica Weissensee, who teaches journalism and communications at the University of Portland. And it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart, the Royal Rosarians, and something I've been very familiar with as a native Portlander. In 1911, a delegation of 10 businessmen represented Portland at Seattle's Golden Potlatch Festival. On the train ride home, the men agreed that Portland needed an official body to promote the Rose Festival and Portland in general. About 100 men responded to the invitation to become Royal Rosarians. The organization's mythical traditions, including annual knighting ceremonies at the International Rose Test Garden, are inspired by English history. The Rosarians made their first appearance at the 1912 Rose Festival wearing their signature white wool suits and straw hats. The uniform has remained virtually unchanged throughout the organization's history. While Rosarians fulfill ambassadorial duties throughout the year, the group makes its largest public appearance at the annual Grand Floral Parade coming right up in June. They march alongside each float for the length of the parade route and serve as escorts for the Queen of Rosaria and her court. Then finally, in 1989, the Royal Rosarians broke from long-held tradition when they inducted their first three female members. Today, about 275 men and women wear the white uniforms.
Thank you. Further courtesies? Seeing none. Verification of quorum. Clerk will open the voting system, determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Barnhart, off the floor. Representative Nolan, off the floor. Representative Shields, off the floor. Representative Richardson, off the floor. Representative Buckley and Representative Hunt, excused for business. Representative Barker, Representative Holby, excused. Quorum is present. Representative Berger, for what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Would like to briefly return to courtesies.
Representative Berger requests unanimous consent to return to the order of business of courtesies. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues up in the South Isle, I'd like you to welcome the Western Oregon University class on state and local government. If you'd give them a wave and teach them a thing or two about what we do down here, and say hello if you see them in the hall. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. And welcome to your capital. Thanks for being here. Representative, further courtesies, Representative Thompson.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to return to courtesies.
We're there. It's up
okay.
to you.
Colleagues, I'd like you to extend a warm welcome today to a group of my constituents in the back gallery, seven students from Lake Creek Mennonite School down. It's a very rural country school down by Halsey, and some adult members of the Mennonite Church who are visiting with us today.
Thank you, and welcome to your capital. It's great to have you here. Further courtesies? Seeing none. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bills 537, House Bills 2040, 2063, 2133, 2187, 2224, 2340, adopted SCR 15, HCR 4, passed the following House Bill as amended by the Senate. House Bill 2630, Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the assigned House Bills 2039, 2062, 2041, 2050, 2111, 2213, 2362, and 2704.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
SCR 15, in memoriam, Sam Rupert Haley, 1919 to 2009.
Measures read the first time is passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Chair requests unanimous consent. The rules be suspended and that SCR 1 be considered immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the resolution.
SCR 1, in memoriam, Phyllis K. Beck, 1949 to 2008.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 1. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today I bring you Senate Concurrent Resolution 1 in memory of Phyllis K. Beck. And Phyllis was one of the very strongest advocates of the education effort on hepatitis C. Phyllis was born in St. Helens in 1949 and was adopted by Walter and Beth Beck and made it her mission to bring healing to others. She founded the Hepatitis C Awareness Project, an Oregon grassroots organization designed to increase the awareness of viral hepatitis and to help educate the community around HCV prevention, diagnosis, and treatment. She was also the founder of the National Hepatitis C Prison Coalition. This was a group formed to bring together organizations and individuals interested in raising awareness and providing support to prisoners who suffered from hepatitis and HIV-HCV co-infections. And this whole, you might remember two sessions ago, I carried a bill that proposed to do some of the work around the advocacy for hepatitis C. And at that time, I gave you similar statistics, but really, there's no prevention or treatment. There's treatment. There's no vaccine for this form of hepatitis. Treatment costs about $50,000 a year versus the other way that you have to deal with it, which is surgery, and all you're really getting is another liver. You still might create. You still might get this hepatitis C at another point, and that's upwards of about $500,000. 25 to 35% of the prisoners in the Multnomah County Jail, 35%, that's over a third, are Hep C positive. 20 to 40%, almost half, in Oregon Corrections Institution. Phyllis works tirelessly on this issue. She's walked many miles in the halls of Congress in Washington, D.C., and here in Salem. She worked constantly telling her story, advocating for change, and using her voice to help the millions of Americans living with viral hepatitis. She had two children, and they will miss her daily. Whereas she believed in the miracle of life and never forgot the importance of being here for others, she passed away March 21st from complications of hepatitis C. We honor her today, and with me and with you on the side aisle are Lauren and Kevin Beck Sant, who have worked with her side by side for as long as I've been involved in this issue. They'd please stand. And they were her best friends. You might recognize them from last year and this year, or last session and session before and this session. So please, members of our assembly, please pass this Senate concurrent resolution today. And I wanted to just mention, there was a House concurrent resolution also. We came at this from both angles, and out of courtesy for our senior members of the legislature, Senator Johnson and I brought this forward. We are moving forth with the Senate version, the same exact resolution. So please join me in adopting this resolution today.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Boone, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion the resolution should be adopted, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All present have voted. SCR 1, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. I want to thank you very much for being here and sharing this day with us. Thank you. Propositions and motions. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House concur the Senate amendments to House Bill 2203 and repass the bill.
Representative Schaffler moves House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2203B and repass the bill. To your motion.
House Bill 2203B originally clarifies that laws related to the Employment Department are controlling over changes made in other ORS chapters. The Senate amended the bill to ensure that Oregon is qualified to receive the remaining two-thirds of the total $85 million of unemployed insurance modernization incentive payments under the American Recovery and Investment Act, qualify the state for additional federal funds to pay extended benefits to unemployed workers who would not otherwise qualify for unemployment insurance benefits, and makes a technical correction to the original bill. It's a good bill. Urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2203B and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Girard, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Representative Berger, how do you vote? Excuse business of the House. House Bill 2203B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3495, relating to law enforcement contracts, policy, and data review committee.
Bill read the first time, has passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2005, relating to election petitions and declaring an emergency.
Bills read the second time, has passed to third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill in a short summary. Representative Freeman, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Request a return of courtesies.
Representative Freeman requests return to order of courtesies by unanimous consent. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we have with us up in the gallery today students from the Green Elementary School in Roseburg. They've come a long way to be with us today. Colleagues, please welcome to your house. Guys.
Further courtesies? Seeing none, we will return to the order of business of consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 65, relating to school finance and declaring an emergency, allows superintendent of public instruction to waive or extend certain dates related to school finance in case of emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of SB 65. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
Gilliam votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Representative Garrett votes aye. Gilliam is an aye. Senate Bill 65, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill and short summary.
Senate Bill 81, relating to performance security of lottery contractors, extends types of performance security Oregon State Lottery Commission may accept from lottery contractor.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 81A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, vote no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nathanson, how do you vote? Representative Nathanson, how do you vote? Nathanson votes aye. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Representative Kotek votes aye. Representative Stiegler, how do you vote? Stiegler votes aye. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Greenlick votes aye. Senate Bill 81A, having received the constitutional requirement, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 167, relating to participation in self-pay groups for benefit plans administered by Public Employees Benefit Board, authorized Public Employees Benefit Board to allow certain nurses and nurse educators to participate in self-pay group benefit plans.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 167. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Richardson votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Senate Bill 167A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 389, relating to criminal sentencing, precludes court from imposing less than presumptive sentence when sentencing certain repeat offenders.
The question now rises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 389A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. We're going to skip. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Representative Clem, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? He votes aye. Senate Bill 389A, having received the constitutional required votes, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Oh, sorry about that. Third reading of House bills. That was a clap for the other one. Third reading of House bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that House Bill 2370 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Wednesday, May 20th, 2009 calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Hanna, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to suspend the rules for the purposes of a Republican caucus for 5 minutes on the floor.
We do not need a rule suspension. We will be at ease. Representative Hanna requests we stand at ease for 5 minutes. Representative Kotek? Thank you. We will, without objection, we will take a short at ease for 5 minutes on the floor. Thank you. When we stood at ease, we were in the third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2726, relating to nutritional information for consumers and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on House Bill, on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2726B. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2726B is all about giving Oregon consumers easy access to some very basic nutrition information. It's a bill about providing Oregonians with new tools to help them make healthier choices when eating out. It's about common sense public health policy, and it's about transparency and truth in advertising. House Bill 2726B requires chain restaurants operating in Oregon to provide readily available basic nutrition information on the food they sell and to post the calorie content of food items on their menus, menu boards, and food tags. A chain restaurant is defined in the bill as an affiliation of 15 or more restaurants operating within the United States. The calorie posting requirement applies to drive-through menu signs, and chain restaurants would have to have nutrition information available in written form starting January of 2010. The following year, in January 2011, chain restaurants would have to post the calorie information on their menus and menu boards, making it as visible as the price of the menu item. All standardized menu items offered for sale for more than 90 days would have this information, including alcoholic beverages. Cities, counties, and states across the country have implemented nearly identical requirements, including New York City, Philadelphia, King County, and Washington State, and Oregon's own Multnomah County. California's law goes into effect with the same timelines of this bill. Public health officials in Massachusetts passed a statewide ordinance just yesterday. While many public health advocates and industry observers expect a national law in the future, it is up to local and state government to lead by example on this important public health policy. With all of this momentum across the nation, I'm excited that Oregon has the opportunity to join two other states in providing this basic consumer nutrition information to all its residents. But menu labeling is more than a trend. It's good public policy, supported by two of Oregon's state reports issued this year alone, citing that this would be a critical tool to help us reduce the incidence of diabetes and obesity in Oregon. County commissioners and public health staff in Multnomah County are to be commended for their hard work and leadership in implementing their local policy for menu labeling this past February, an effort that blazed the path for bringing forth this statewide version of menu labeling. Multnomah County's efforts paved the way for the wider reach of this bill, and I am truly thankful for their support for the general public health of the state. If I have one regret with this proposal, it is that Multnomah County's local success in requiring calories on menus and menu boards will be interrupted for a year and a half, while the rest of the state and the remainder of the chain restaurants operating in Oregon are given time to gear up to meet the requirements of the bill. While I generally don't believe in preemption of county policies and practices, I believe a strong case can be made for phasing in a statewide public health standard that will benefit every Oregon consumer. This bill carefully balances the interests of consumers, good public health policy, and the needs of businesses in a tough economic environment. Although the bill concept was originally modeled on Multnomah County's rules, the hard work of many stakeholders produced the bill we have before us today. This bill represents a carefully negotiated proposal that incorporates key elements of Multnomah County's requirements while supplementing them with technical portions of California's menu labeling law and ideas from King County, Washington. From California, we borrowed the implementation timeline and the language around combination and family meals. And with inspiration from King County, we added rulemaking direction that would allow for a variance should a restaurant have site-specific challenges to complying with the menu labeling policy for their drive-thrus. There are many reasons why providing consumers with nutrition information is important. Some chain restaurants currently provide this information, but it generally comes in the form of websites, tray liners, or brochures. Though these methods are a good start, people see this information at the point of guilt instead of the point of purchase. In fact, less than 8% of customers see this information at all. In one study, Yale University researchers observed only 6 out of 4,300 patrons at chain restaurants accessing nutritional information before ordering. This becomes a problem when 9 out of 10 consumers underestimate the calorie count of the food they eat by more than 600 calories. And even experienced nutrition professionals underestimate the number of calories in restaurant food by 200 to 600 calories. House Bill 2726B solves this problem by ensuring point-of-purchase nutritional information readily visible when people are making the decision of what to order, just like when they decide what to purchase in the grocery store. National polls show that over 70% of adults access nutrition labels on packaged foods, just as over 70% say they are trying to eat healthier at restaurants than they did 2 years ago. This alone is a reason to respond to our constituents by giving them the information they desire. But most importantly, it does make a difference. A study in New York City found that fast food consumers who saw calorie information when ordering purchased 52 fewer calories on average than those who did not. Since cutting only 100 calories per day could prevent weight gain in the majority of the population, that difference means better health and lower health care costs for all of us. Colleagues, having prices listed on the menus and menu boards at chain restaurants is a standard practice, and in my perspective, posting calories is no different. This bill will remind consumers of the health-related consequences of their choices. And just like you might still sometimes pay more for a larger soft drink, diners in chain restaurants might choose the menu options with a greater calorie price. And that's to be expected. But I believe that we need to make sure consumers are provided with the information necessary to be better informed about the choices that they're making by being sure that the nutrition information they want and need is available when they want it and when they need it. By giving consumers this information at the point of purchase, we empower them to make informed decisions about their diet and health. This bill, at its core, is all about common sense information and consumer education. In conclusion, I would like to thank all the advocates and industry representatives who have worked on this bill, particularly the organizations under the umbrella of the Oregon Nutrition Policy Alliance and the government relations staff of the Oregon Restaurant Association. I would also like to thank Chuck Taylor and Legislative Council for his help with all the various amendments and the great work of my legislative assistant, Marianne Almeida. Colleagues, this is a good bill. It's been well worked. It's worthy of your support, and I welcome questions, and I urge your support.
Further discussion? Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
Would the good representative from North Portland explain, in Section 4 on Line 9, it says the Department of Human Services shall adopt rules the department considers reasonable for the administration and enforcement of sections. And then down on line 15, it says, to the extent the department considers practical, follows the relevant United States FDA practices. You testified in committee that DHS would indeed follow those FDA practices. And I'm asking you again for your opinion, does that still hold true?
Thank you, Representative, for the question. Thank you for notifying me in advance about the question. Yes, the intent of this bill is not for the Department of Human Services Public Health Division to reinvent the wheel and come up with a whole new set of values for the calorie content in foods. They will, to the fullest extent possible, follow the U.S. Food and Drug Administration practices, standards, and rules for nutrition labeling and caloric value of the individual menu items. The reason that they wanted to make sure that there was some flexibility with the language on line 15 on page 4, to the extent the department considers practicable, is because if they deviated from the FDA practices in any way, they would be worried about liability issues from being sued. But more importantly, there's another aspect of this bill that's quite interesting. We added in one of the final amendments actual values for particular alcoholic beverages, and came to my attention that the U.S. FDA actually has something like 50 values for different types of wines. We have exactly one value here in the bill now for a certain, amount of wine. And so by having the to the fullest extent practicable, we have flexibility to be able to do that we wouldn't have otherwise if we had taken that out.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
I voted no in committee on this, colleagues. I guess part of me is kind of resenting the fact that we have Portland and the Willamette Valley again trying to impose what you feel is right on everybody in the state. If you don't know that a Big Mac is probably nutritionally not good for you when you order it, I don't think putting the calories on it is going to make that big a difference after you take the first bite. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Call.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this bill creates a very difficult decision for me. And so while I'm going to urge all of you to support this bill, I cannot. And it's for a very simple reason that has to do with my community. Multnomah County has a standard in place, that protects my community and their public health interests far in excess of what this bill does. With all due respect to the characterization of this bill by the good representative from Southern Klamath County, this is not Multnomah County or the Portland metro area trying to enforce its values upon the rest of the state, because we have staked out a set of values that is much broader than what this bill represents. And because of that, if I were to vote for this bill today, I would be voting to lessen the public health standards that my county has put in place to protect my constituency. This has been a very difficult decision for me. But what weighs in the balance is the fact that I need to protect my constituents as best I can. And what also weighs in the balance is that there is great hardship facing my district, hardship for which policies in this building will not be put in place to protect them. Recently at a town hall, I had a group of constituents ask me, is there any way for us to get any extra money to our community? And I told them no. I told them no, that the problems our community faces, we are going to have to fix ourselves. And in that same regard, I cannot possibly vote to lessen the public health standards that are there to protect my community. The same way I cannot vote, ask you all to vote to fix my community's problems, I should not be asked to vote to lessen the standards put in place by my county commission that protect my constituencies. So while I urge you to vote in support of this bill, especially those of you who do not reside within Multnomah County, I myself cannot support this bill because it does lessen the protections that my constituents have in place. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today in support of this bill and really want to acknowledge the extraordinary work of the representative from North Portland, who has worked with a variety of interests and stakeholders to come up with a product that can work all the way across the state and have broad-based support across the state. And what I wanted to talk to you about today is why I think this will work, what I think it does, and why it is so important. The first principle is I believe we should never keep information away from people. And ultimately, the only thing that this bill does is provide information to consumers so that they can be responsible for making their own choices about their health and their nutrition. We have an extraordinary obesity epidemic right now. And we've talked about that. We've talked about that in the context of healthcare reform, and we've talked about the need for people to take personal responsibility and how that is a key component to bringing down healthcare costs. One of those is controlling our weight and taking better care of ourselves. Americans, Oregonians eat many of their meals outside of their house. If they don't have the information, how can they choose what it is that they want to eat? In the committee, there was a comment made about whether or not this would really make a difference and whether or not we could really change our behaviors, because many of us really like our French fries and our onion rings, and if we see that calorie count on the menu, I see one representative that really likes his onion rings. He's indicating that right now. If we see that calorie count on the menu, are we really going to not order them, or are we still going to order them and just feel a little bit more guilty than we already did? But, colleagues, this isn't just about us. This is about shaping the behavior of a next generation of Oregonians before they develop the habits that we have already developed. And I got to see this in action last December when I knew this bill was coming. We were in Seattle. We were at a mall in downtown Seattle in one of those little food court areas, and they had already implemented this menu labeling process. And I took my kids. They got to choose lunch there, and they actually looked at what the calorie counts were on these different products. One of my daughters still wanted to go to McDonald's, and she wanted to order her Happy Meal, and she was dumbfounded to realize that the difference between what she chose to drink, water or soda, and what she chose as her side dish, apples or French fries, made a difference of nearly 400 calories for a little tiny 7-year-old, 8-year-old girl. She chose the apples and the water instead. She hasn't yet developed that habit of always ordering the French fries or always ordering the onion rings or always ordering the bigger size. I believe when she has the information and she's learning earlier, she's going to make smarter choices, and she wants to make smarter choices. I believe Oregonians want the opportunity to make smarter choices. This bill doesn't force them to do it. It gives them the information, and it allows them to exercise some personal responsibility in choosing how to take care of themselves. Colleagues, this is a very good bill that extends important access to information to consumers all across the state of Oregon. I congratulate the legislator from North Portland and urge your enthusiastic aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. First of all, my applause, if you will, my congratulations to the good representative from the area where there's a lot of Democrats. Where is that? From North Portland, for her stalwart work on this bill. She has been a true health champion, and my hat is off to you, good representative. Colleagues, this is a compromise bill. This is a good compromise bill that took into consideration a lot of elements, a lot of time, a lot of committee hours, as I've observed, were spent on this. And in the final analysis, I think we have a good product. I don't want to speak too long other than to say, as I've talked on the House floor before, as an advocate for diabetes and diabetes care, this will have a tremendous positive impact on the growing epidemic of diabetes, of course obesity, but of diabetes that we have in the state. Real quick, I have a diabetes. I go into a restaurant now, it's just my own personal thing, and I think, wow, I'm going to a nice restaurant. I'm going to spend a lot of money on a nice dinner. I actually ramp up the amount of insulin I use, and I get home, and almost invariably I find myself with a low blood sugar condition in which I have to follow that large meal with another large meal. Boy, if I had the information, could I avoid that roller coaster effect? So when we start looking at diabetes in the state, we just had a report to the Healthcare Committee 2 days ago that indicated that the annual cost of diabetes on the state of Oregon is $1.5 billion. Colleagues, think about that. $1.5 billion is the annual cost to this state for diabetes. If we're doing our fiduciary responsibility, forget about diabetes, forget about obesity, if we're just doing our fiduciary responsibility to taxpayers and we're not taking that into account, then I argue we're not doing our fiduciary responsibility. So, colleagues, look at those large numbers and that one example of diabetes with that as you're looking at this bill, and I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I voted yes on this bill in committee as a courtesy to my good friend from North Portland who has worked, I think, unbelievably hard to bring this bill to us today. The difficulty I have today, and I've had all along, is I've had 130 staff people. I've worked with over 700 families every year, and nutrition was the fundamental basis of a lot of the work that we did. And in spite of all of the nutrition information we had, and we had USDA menu planners that suggested what we could eat, we still struggled with the art of eating. And unfortunately, eating is, for me, I think, an emotional issue, not a rational issue. And consequently, I have some troubles with the idea that we're going to solve our problems by posting calorie counts on menus. I mean, we've had the food pyramid, we've had labeling on foods, and we still have these health problems. In addition, my concern is that for me it's an unfunded mandate that only a small segment is paying for, and one of my local franchisees has a legitimate complaint that he has to post bought the grocery store up the street that's not, which is actually serving the same thing, does not. So there's a fairness and equity in this. So I am a no today.
Further discussion, Representative Greenleck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I usually rise to the bill. I usually rise on this kind of a bill to talk about public health principles. But today I want to talk about personal issues and about how sometimes we do things to help folks who are struggling in one way or another in our society. As you can imagine, I've struggled my whole life dealing with weight, and I've worked very hard on it. And I was bragging on something yesterday. I'm back in Weight Watchers to Harriet. About how I needed a snack in the afternoon, and I went down on the way to another meeting and stopped downstairs at the gift shop and bought, look over all the labels on all the possible snacks, found one that was the least of a problem, looking at the calories, the fat, and the fiber, got on my Weight Watchers book, translated that into the number of Weight Watchers points in six peanut butter crackers that came in a package, figured out half of it was what I want, walked over to the waste basket, took three out, threw three away, and ate the other three as my snack, which was a snack that fit into my pattern. I was very proud of that behavior. Rather than getting two packages and eating both of them, in this case, got one package, threw half of them away before I was tempted. You all know we eat out a lot, and it's very hard to eat out when you're trying to deal with weight or with other dietary restrictions. So we've found that we can go to Applebee's, and Applebee's has on its menu, in a variety of dishes, the number of Weight Watchers points that are available, which we could calculate if we had the fat and the fat grams and the fiber fat grams and the calories. Well, it's very hard to do, and it's very hard to eat out for those of us that are either trying to reduce cholesterol or trying to reduce sodium or trying to reduce weight. And all this bill does is give us more information. I was trying to think about what it would be like to go into a restaurant if there were no prices on the menu. And I'm trying to figure out what I can afford. And the restaurant didn't have the prices on the menu. And we could call the waiter over and the food server over and ask if they could bring us information on what the price of these two items that I was contemplating are. Well, it's basically the same issue. We're trying to make personal choices in life, and it's hard. Society's stacked against us in terms of trying to deal with one or the other of a dietary problem we face. This bill simply requires in a place where it's possible to do it, chains of restaurants for food that's available on the menu at all time to allow us to have a little bit more nutrition information to help us as we make these, as we make choices. So I personally support this bill, and I would suggest others of you join me to help those of us that struggle with these problems make our life a little easier as we're forced to eat out. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, first of all, I'd like to thank the representative from North Portland for all the hard work on this bill. We've had references today about fairness. We'd have references today about my local jurisdiction versus your local jurisdiction or state jurisdiction. We've had lots of references. And obviously, this bill, like many pieces of legislation that we put forth from here is not going to be fair or perfect to somebody. But I do want to thank the representative for bringing groups together and coming up with a bill that some people could live with. And some people could see it as something that would potentially reduce the impact, the negative impacts of this policy that is going through our state on a local basis. Colleagues, this is a bill that I just have a question for you. A diet soda, glass of milk. If you walk into a restaurant that comes under this bill, what are the calories going to say? Diet soda, zero. Glass of milk, representative, 9, I don't know, 29, 45, I don't know. Which one's healthier for you? Which one's the better choice? I won't turn and look at my good friend from Roseburg when I ask that question. But we have to be very careful about thinking we are the ones that are going to change people's behaviors. What this bill does is require information to be posted or to be given or to be available for people. The good thing about the bill is that people who are trying to operate restaurants in Multnomah County, Lane County, Marion County, Jackson County, that have multi-locations will be able to operate under the same set of rules and guidelines and minimize their financial impact, as well as maximize the information that is available to the consumer. And I think that is really critical, that we have consistent information throughout our state. Because there's a potential we could be standing on one side of the street and be operating under a different set of guidelines than is on the other side of the street. We see an example of that right here in Salem, depending on which side of the river you're in on. Polk County versus Marion County. So, colleagues, is it fair? I'd just as soon keep going and let the market drive it. We have customers, guests in our restaurants that ask for information, and we try to provide it whenever we can, whenever it's available to us. I'd just as soon allow the market to drive it. But our local jurisdictions are passing rules as we speak today that will make it very difficult for the people we're asking to provide this information to do business in the state. So if we have to have this information, if we have to do it, I urge your support on a bill today before us that would be consistent across the state. The last thing I would like to say is, as we're sitting here today, somebody provided me some information about how DHS is conducting surveys in front of restaurants with, I assume, government grant money. We have people standing out in front of restaurants to gather information that are looking at you as you walk into the restaurant and saying, hey, would you go ask, when you go in here, would you ask for the nutritional information? And after reviewing the nutritional information, if it changes your mind, would you come back outside, show me your receipt?
Representative Gilman yields.
Thank you, Representative. Go inside, pull the information, ask to see the information. Obviously, these are restaurants that have the information today. And if you change your mind, come back outside and show me your receipt, and I'll give you $2. I'll give you $2. Does that influence your behavior? Colleagues, those are the types of things, though, are happening to provide information that we're going to be making decisions on, or that advocates will be sitting when this bill comes before us again to be changed in the future. We'll be using that information. I don't think that's a good use of resources. I don't think that's a fair way to look at that information. So I'm saying that the DHS hopefully is hearing this, that that is not the way to do those types of surveys, and it's not a good use of grant or taxpayer monies. Colleagues, I will be voting for this bill today with obviously mixed emotions, and I urge you to do whatever your heart desires.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kotek, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, thank you for the excellent debate today. This is an important bill, and I anticipated some good conversation, so thank you. Want to respond to a couple of the comments. I'm looking at my dietetic database up on the gallery. I believe a glass of milk is 120 calories, just in case you were wondering. Is calorie information enough? Of course it's not. Ideally, particularly in our schools, we're providing adequate health education that our children know more about what they're eating than just the calorie content. But a national study has shown, when looking at different types of diets, different types of diet regimens, really what it comes down to is the amount of calories you put in your body every day. It doesn't matter if you're on a high-fat, low-fat, fiber, whatever diet. The common denominator in losing weight was the number of calories. And why are we just providing calories on the boards? Because that's the most simplistic and obvious thing we can do. You can't put three or four things on a board next to a price, but we can do calories. It's an important indicator, it's a simple way to do it, and it's ready and available when consumers want it. This is really about choice. I go to my local Dairy Queen down on North Lombard and St. John's, and they actually provide some information, but it's on this poster that's in about six-point font, so you have to look at it really close. You got to go to the back corner and read it. But if I want to make a decision between a hot dog or a chili cheese dog, I can do that, but it would be a lot easier to have it on the board so I can make that choice. It's up to me to make that choice, but it wouldn't be great to have that information there. In terms of the comments from the good representative from East Multnomah County on the standards in Multnomah County, I want to assure everyone here that for the consumer, this bill will do exactly what Multnomah County does. Nutrition information in written form, the same type of nutrition information, and the calories on the menus, menu boards, and food tags. The changes that we made will be invisible to the consumer. They are technical issues around how you determine values, how do you determine values around family meals and combo meals. We made those changes for consistency purposes for the industry because we have other states doing different things and they needed consistency. That was a reasonable ask. It does not water down the ultimate effect of the bill, which is calories next to the price on the menu boards. There is a modest rulemaking ability for the Department of Human Services to create some criteria for some very site-specific challenges for restaurants who have drive-thrus. This is not going to apply to Multnomah County. They're not, you know, in a town where they can't build a sign a certain size. What we heard from some of the industry folks that there might be some communities that have restrictions on the size of the boards they can put in their drive-thrus. We wanted to provide some criteria that says you still need to post, but you might be able to do it in a slightly different way because of the site-specific issues in your community. That's not going to affect Multnomah County. Up until yesterday when Massachusetts passed their bill or passed their new ordinance, this bill, if passed, will be the strongest statewide bill in the country. California doesn't have drive-thrus. They don't cover alcoholic beverages. This does drive-thrus and alcoholic beverages. And what I would say about the Massachusetts policy that's been put into place, that did not go through a legislative process. That was determined by public health officials in that state. It was done as an ordinance. I think when you have a policy of this importance, that it needs to go through a legislative process where we do bring all the stakeholders together and talk about the consequences for our business, for communities, and how to make this work. And I'm very proud of this bill, and I would argue it will be the strongest legislatively approved bill in the country on this particular issue. Does it pay me that we have to wait in Multnomah County for a little while longer? Absolutely. But I would argue we have restaurants who have already started to implement and will continue to do so because I believe that actually is a competitive advantage for them to provide that information. But at the end of the day, in January 2011, we will have consistency across all counties, which will make it easier for all the chain restaurants that this affects to provide this information for Oregonians in every corner of the state, which is, I think, our responsibility, and that's why the bill has been constructed the way it is. I can't speak to the DHS study that was referenced by the good representative from Salem, but I'll look into it and get you information. I don't know anything about that study, but these are important issues. We need to understand how behavior, consumer choice affects health issues, and so I'll get more information for you so you can understand how that study is being conducted. Finally, I just want to make sure that you notice the floor letters, one from the Wine Institute in support of the bill, along with the Oregon Wine Growers Association, the Distilled Spirits Council of the U.S., and the Hood River Distillers, showing that if we're going to cover the alcoholic beverage issue, we came to some language that absolutely is identical to Multnomah County on alcoholic beverages. Colleagues, this is a good bill. I think this is one we can all go home and be proud of, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Representative Cameron, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your conflict.
That I'm a member of a limited liability company that operates restaurants in a chain.
So noted for the record. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2726B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read. That was it. Final reading, memorials, and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended, that the consideration of SCR 7 be carried over to its and placed on its proper order on Tuesday, May 19th, 2009 calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 537 relating to business practices of districts.
Bills read the first time is passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Oh. Senate Bill 87 relating to death investigations and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 115 related to Oregon University System Payroll Deficit. Senate Bill 159 related to communicable diseases and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 214 related to Attorney General's regulation of tobacco. Senate Bill 262 related to courts and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 469 related to business activities conducted by minors. Senate Bill 479 related to opportunities for disabled veterans and public contracting and declaring an emergency.
Bills read the second time are passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 238 relating to protective proceedings.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 238A. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 238A is a product of the Uniform Laws Commission, which seeks national adoption of this act. It's been adopted in several states right now. It's been proposed in, I believe, over a dozen this session. And the Uniform Laws Commission anticipates widespread national adoption throughout American jurisdictions in the coming years. This bill creates a process for determining jurisdiction to appoint a guardian or conservator if there is a conflict between the states. It does not change Oregon's substantive law. I urge its aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. Senate Bill 238A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 251, relating to restricted weapons.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage. Senate Bill 251. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 251 adds electromuscular disruption technology, say that one three times in a row fast, known as tasers, to the list of instruments or weapons identified in ORS 166.270 that, when possessed by a felon, constitutes a crime. This measure is intended to address a growing threat to police officers and the public created by increased availability of the civilian model, C2 model, known as the taser. For police officers, possession or attempted use of a taser can quickly elevate an encounter to a deadly force situation. Tasers have the ability to render an officer incapable of self-defense from an attack and makes the officer's firearm accessible to the perpetrator for the use against them. Eight states have adopted the laws that restrict their usage. The average cost for this model, the C2, is $350, but let me give you a few other stats, too. The Law Weekly reports this in their report on this Taser C2. It has a higher incapacitation rate than a 9mm handgun. And a description of the C2 model is this, for those of you who are not familiar with it. The Taser C2 shoots out two darts attached to 15 feet of wire. 50,000 volts travel through the wires with incredible takedown power. Colleagues, I would urge your aye vote on this. This truly, I do not want to see a felon have this in their possession, and I most definitely think that this should be added to the list of restricted weapons. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 251, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 98, relating to veterans transportation and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 98. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 98 comes to you on a unanimous vote of the Veterans and Emergency Services Committee after passing the Senate without opposition. It picks up the unfinished work of the Governor's Task Force on Veterans Services and establishes a Task Force on Veterans Transportation to examine the needs of Oregon veterans when accessing VA health care facilities. On last Tuesday, we passed SJM 2, urging Congress to recognize and fund a statewide veterans transportation system. We did that in order to encourage our federal partners to recognize our geographic diversity and the challenges that it presents to veterans needing transport to medical care. Thankfully, Congressman DeFazio has prioritized this issue in Washington. But we can't wait for the federal government action alone. SB 98 is the companion to SJM 2. The governor's task force learned during the course of its work that Oregon veterans need a consistent, dependable transportation system to and from VA medical facilities. For many Oregon veterans who live in rural and remote parts of the state, transportation to VA facilities is nearly impossible. The situation is even worse for wheelchair-bound individuals. The VA has large medical centers in Portland, Roseburg, and Walla Walla that provide the system's specialty care. Primary care is provided through community-based outpatient clinics located in Bend, Brookings, Eugene, Klamath Falls, LeGrand, North Bend, Ontario, Portland, Salem, and Warrenton. For veterans living significant distances from these facilities, transportation has become the issue and all too often determines whether a veteran receives health care or goes without. Thanks to a stalwart group of dedicated veterans, Oregon does have a limited veterans transportation system of 23 vans operated by the Disabled American Veterans Service Organization in partnership with the federal VA. However, there are not enough vans to cover the state. Secondly, it's a cruel irony that these vans are not allowed to transport wheelchair-bound passengers. By creating this task force and staying in close touch with our federal partners, we will be able to create innovative public-private solutions to help veterans access the health care they need and have earned, no matter where in this great state they happen to reside. I urge your support of SB 98.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cowan, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 98, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 106, related to Oregon Youth Authority.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 106B. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you to Senate Bill 106B, passed out of the Judiciary Committee unanimously. It allows the Oregon Youth Authority to provide funding to federally recognized Indian tribes in Oregon for services for at-risk tribal juveniles, allows tribes to seek diversion funds. I was asked by a member of the body about, is it federal money or state money? It is state money, and this is in accordance with Senate Bill 6770, which calls for enhanced relationships with the tribes, as well as Oregon Youth Authority's commitment to effective evidence-based programs. We ask the governor to propose this legislation. And 106 enables 9 tribes to make application for funds and gives OYA authority to make these, provide these services. Thank you. I urge a yes vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wisnett, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? She votes aye. Senate Bill 106B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 380, relating to testimony in criminal proceedings.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 380A. Representative Stiegler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, 380A comes to you from your Judiciary Committee. What it essentially does is remove the current prohibition in criminal cases of allowing simultaneous electronic transmission of testimony. And what this bill does is bring it more in line with the civil case law and allow such testimony under circumstances where both parties have agreed and where the court as well is in agreement. If the court for some reason felt that it was not warranted or appropriate under the circumstances of the particular case, they could essentially veto the agreement of the state and the defense. So
what this does is just bring us sort of into the modern age and recognize that sometimes the practicality of a case requires that rather than having to bring witnesses physically to the courthouse, that it is reasonable to allow them to testify electronically. So I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Stegler, do you wish to close? She does not. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Senate Bill 380A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that Senate Bill 398 and 622 be taken from today's calendar and placed on their proper place on Tuesday, May 19, 2009 calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 625, relating to Ewing Young.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 625. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Colleagues, Senate Bill 625 would make February 9th of every year Ewing Young Day in Oregon to celebrate the life, many accomplishments, and, oddly enough, the death of Ewing Young. His legacy is the creation of Oregon's first government and set in motion events which led to Oregon statehood. With this bill, we seek to bring Oregon history alive for students and citizens alike. Learning about Ewing Young and his accomplishments helps us understand the pioneer spirit. It helps us appreciate what we have today, and it did not happen easily, but came through much struggle, sacrifice, and an entrepreneurial spirit. We hope that school children across Oregon will learn to love and appreciate Ewing Young, and his colorful life to understand the history of Oregon. Ewing Young was the first settler in the Chehalem Valley, settling in a spot across from Shampooey, that gathering place of early Oregon trappers and settlers. He played a key role in the settlement and establishment of government in Oregon. He was a colorful trapper and trader and early entrepreneur who saw the possibilities of this rich new land. As a youth, he left Tennessee and traveled to New Mexico, where he trapped and traded. Young took a young trapper named Kit Carson under his wing and taught him and other early explorers the skills needed to live in the western wilderness. Because he had many trapping parties, he led many trapping parties. Nearly every trailblazer in the early West knew Ewing Young. His spirit of independence and self-sufficiency played a key role in the breaking of the British Hudson's Bay Company monopoly over the beaver economics of early Oregon. He built sawmills and ranches. He established a trading center and even built Oregon's first still for moonshine. He gave that up for a chance to organize the Willamette Cattle Company, which eventually made him very rich. He drove the first non-Hudson Bay Company cattle into the Willamette Valley from the cattle-rich hills of California. And this act alone, providing beef to the independent settlers of the Willamette, Chehalem, and Tualatin Valleys, was critical in giving the early settlers the ability to gain their independence from British subservience. This 6'3" leader had blazed the first path into the Oregon from the south. And when we look at the Oregon pioneer with axe in hand and an optimistic but determined look to the west, we should think of Ewing Young. Men like Young braved adversity, overcame obstacles, created the order of a civilized frontier in the rich green place at the end of the long western trail. His memory lives on today at Ewing Young Elementary School in the Newburgh School District, where I plan to work with students and staff on a fitting commemoration next February 9th, 2010. As students and Oregonians learn about him, we will find our favorite part, which will help us all understand Oregon history better. I ask for your support on Senate Bill 625, so that on February 9th of each year, school children and the people of Oregon can remember that his story is really our story, which, as the state song says, land of the empire builders, land of the golden west, conquered and held by freemen, fairest and the best, and this spirit of freedom, enterprise, and determined independence will live on in our children well into Oregon's bright future.
Co-carrier Representative Wingard.
Mr. Chair, colleagues, thank you for your patience on this second history minute today on the floor. The unusual thing about this honoring this day for Ewen Young is that we're not honoring his birthday, we're honoring his death day. And there's a reason for that. One of the most remarkable aspects of his life was that his death helped bring about Oregon government. He's not pictured in that mural, and there's a very good reason. It was because his passing is what led ultimately to the activity in the mural that we stare at every day. So, when Ewing Lung died, he helped bring Oregon government into being by establishing the rule of law and leading to the appointment of Dr. Ira Babcock as Oregon's first presiding judge to probate Ewing Young's considerable estate. The earliest trappers and settlers were unsure about the need for establishing a government. Most of them had spent years trapping beavers throughout the western wilderness. When Ewing Young died on February 9th, 1941, there was no immediate heir and no probate court. The day after Young's funeral, a little bit later in February, the Reverend Jason Lee met with the settlers to discuss the situation. Dr. Babcock, the doctor at Lee's Willamette Mission, had a set of law books from the state of New York, which he used to settle Young's claims, collect his debts, and sell his Chehalem Valley farm to Sidney Smith, who had worked with Young and cared for him in his declining days. Some of the proceeds were used to build a jail in Oregon City. Some were later paid out to the son of Young, who came to Oregon years after his death. All of the records of this probate are kept in detail in Oregon's state archives. But the legacy of Ewing Young's life, death, and probate are clear. The first form of government in Oregon had been established. The Wolf meetings that followed further detailed the kind of government every early Oregonians wanted, which led to the formation of the provisional government at Shampooey on May 2, 1843, depicted by the mural behind the dais in our chamber. In another significant way, the death of Ewing Young marked the transition from an unsettled and uncivilized Oregon to a place with more American settlers arriving every year in the great westward migration. Property rights were very important to these settlers. Without the rule of law, courts, and the ability to establish and defend land claims, settlement would have been much more uncertain for the new arrivals. The seeds of Oregon government, sown by the death of Ewing Young and germinated in the political discourse of the Wolf meetings, created the beginnings of the government we have in Oregon today. For this reason and many more, I urge the House to pass Senate Bill 625 so that each year on February 9th we may remind Oregonians that the death of Ewing Young on this day in 1841 created the birth of the state of Oregon that we live in. Thank you, colleagues.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution?
To the
bill.
Bill.
I think it's also good to note, as pioneers, Ewing Young was said to have produced the first distillery to make whiskey in Oregon, and that caused the formation of the Oregon Temperance Society to try and shut him down. So he's obviously a very important character in the history of the state.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thatcher, do you wish to close? She does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? She votes aye. Senate Bill 625, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills be carried over to their proper place on Tuesday, May 19, 2009.
third reading calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House? Chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of H.R. 5 be made special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Tuesday, May 19, 2009 calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to ask the House Democrats to caucus for 2 minutes on the floor immediately following adjournment.
Further announcements. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Republicans will caucus immediately after floor for about 15, 20 minutes.
Other announcements? As a reminder, we will not have session on Monday. Our session will start at 10:15 on Tuesday. Committees will be meeting in the morning on Monday. Representative Cameron, further announcement?
Permission to suspend the rules for Representative Call to change his vote on House Bill 2726 will not change the outcome.
Representative Cameron requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended so that Representative Call may change his vote on 2726, House Bill 2726. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Call, how do you vote?
No.
He votes no. Further announcements? Seeing none. Remonstrances. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, the forecast today was not encouraging. The forecast indicated that the Consumer Price Index will decrease in 2009 for the first time since 1955. Oregon's unemployment rate has been above the U.S. rate for the past 12 years. The state economist does not expect to see job growth exceeding 2% until the first quarter of 2011. Colleagues, this is unacceptable. As we work to rebalance the current budget and to balance the next budget, here are a few factors we need to consider. Personal income tax revenue is down $1.1 billion, or 9.6% from the close of session estimates. Corporate income tax revenue is down $234 million, or 25.4% from the close of session estimates. The state economist told us that higher income taxpayers have suffered significant losses, as reflected by sharply lower capital gains taxes, and corporate profits have sagged, further impacting both corporate and personal income tax receipts. It's hard to find many people who are thriving these days in Oregon, yet there is news that some Oregonians are going to be singled out with higher taxes during this recession. I find this troubling because just when you need successful businesses and taxpayers the most, the legislature may drive them away from Oregon to other states, taking their capital, innovation, and ability to create jobs would be much more welcome. There is another way, however. House and Senate Republicans have put a budget plan on the table that funds a full school year, protects public safety and human services, and doesn't require Oregon families and businesses to send even more of their hard-earned dollars to Salem. The Back to Basics plan forces agencies to justify increased spending requests, utilize agency cash balances where appropriate, and freeze salaries across state government. It leaves a surplus to fund higher DHS caseloads, public safety needs, and other contingencies that may arrive. Government alone cannot reverse the state's recession. It can only create an environment where entrepreneurs and businesses can succeed and create jobs. Folks, let's just focus on doing that. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Thatcher.
Actually, on a lighter note, I just wanted to invite everybody out to the Kaiser Iris Festival. It's going to be a great weekend. It's going to be all kinds of old-fashioned good fun. So just come on out to the Kaiser Station and have some good times this weekend.
Further remonstrances. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There will be a town hall meeting tomorrow in Eugene at 10 o'clock in the morning at City Hall for those who would like to hear a realistic appraisal of the budget issues that we face and the meaning of the shortfall. I would commend the body to read and understand the editorial that was written yesterday in the Oregonian on the same subject. It correctly characterizes the issues that were just raised on this floor. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances? Seeing none. Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Tuesday, May 19th, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Tuesday, May 19th, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.